This is the OTB Television Network, a service of Capital District Off-Track Betting.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. A little bit later on, our first visit as far as Countdown to the Crown. We take our steps along the Derby Trail a little bit later on with Jeremy Plonk from horseplayernow.com. His first edition of Countdown to the Crown came out yesterday, so we'll talk some three-year-old action, looking back to New Year's Day and the Jerome with Independence Hall, and looking forward to some of the stakes action this afternoon at Gulfstream and at Santa Anita as well along the three-year-old trail. And as mentioned, there are some three-year-old stakes that we'll play onto the first steps, the baby steps along the Derby Trail down at Gulfstream Park. So I thought we would reach out to Acacia Courtney from Gulfstream, talk a little stakes action this afternoon. Acacia, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. How are you?
Very good. Before we get into the action, how were your holidays?
They were great. My parents came down from Connecticut to South Florida, which was nice for them because they were able to get some warm weather, which was good. and great. We've certainly been kicking off 2020 full steam ahead here at Gulfstream Park. So it's an exciting time of year.
Yeah, the championship meet underway and underway in a fine fashion so far. Things kicked off nicely with the Claiming Crown and the Caribbean Classic, and now we've gotten into some major stakes action over the past couple of weeks. Let me ask you one thing. As you noted, you're a Connecticut person. I'm a Northeast person too. When my dad retired, he spent winters down in Florida. And I started to go down and visit him at Christmas time. And I remember the first year, I was kind of a little off kilter. I thought, man, it's 3 days before Christmas and I'm in the mall in shorts. And I wasn't sure I liked that. So that lasted about 1 year. And then the next year, it's like, I'm in the mall in shorts. This is perfect.
Yeah, it takes a little getting used to. The thing that really threw me off was the Christmas lights on the palm trees. That really threw me for a loop at first, but this is my fourth winter, actually, my fourth championship meet, which is crazy. And I've got to say, I think it was this year in particular. I was like, you know what? Going to the pool around Christmas time and, like, walking on the beach is really great. So it takes some getting used to it first when you grow up like you and I did. But it's definitely nice. No license to complain.
Yeah, when you're used to snow, it's a little bit different, but it doesn't take long. As you said, I get used to a little walk on the beach. Maybe if the weather's right, even get in the water. Fun promotion you guys do on Fridays, Beat the Expert. You rotate around, and fans can kind of challenge you and Jason and Ron. And yesterday was your Beat the Expert day. I know I was in here handicapping doing the OTB live show and noted it was your day, but I wasn't following during the day. How'd it work out?
I got beat, which seems to be the case every week. You know, it's so funny. We always joke that day kind of like puts the curse on us because I feel like, A, you're cheering for like a 1-9 shot more than you would ever want to publicly admit. And it feels like you have more second place finishes or your second place horse ends up winning or something like that. Always. I have won it a couple of times, but we did have some sharp handicappers that picked one more winner than I did yesterday, so they'll get one of those Beat the Expert polos. And Jason will be up next week if we rotate between the three of us.
Yeah, nice. And again, fans can check that out. And as you say, win a nice Gulfstream polo, perhaps. Wanted to touch on a couple other things because in prep for the show, I checked out your Twitter feed, and two things jumped out. First off, you said you went over and visited Omaha Beach this morning. Give us a report.
I did. He hit the track, for the first time this morning. He shipped in on New Year's Eve to Gulfstream Park, and he just jogged once around this morning and then walked in the shed row with his groom, and it was great to get a chance to see him in the flesh. I wasn't here when he first got off the van, but obviously saw him out at Santa Anita in the Breeders' Cup, and we're excited that he's here. It's a fun little rematch in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile with Fun to Run, who's been training up at Palm Meadows, and then Omaha Beach is spending a significant amount of time here at Gulfstream in preparation for the Pegasus World Cup. So just kind of stretched his legs, really easy movement this morning, but I think if you would try to envision like what a classic ideal thoroughbred might look like, that's kind of what Omaha Beach is, a really stunning animal. So it was fun to get a chance to take a look at him today on the backside at Gulfstream, and like I said, just an easy stretch of his legs, but we'll be, I'm sure, keeping our eyes very close on him over the next couple weeks.
Yeah, looking forward to him and what will be his last start in the Pegasus. Certainly, you know, the end of the year, we talked on the handicapping show earlier, and I sent in my Eclipse votes a couple of days ago, and Maximum Security was the three-year-old champ. But you looked at what Omaha Beach did early and then did late, unfortunately missed the middle part of the season, and you wonder what might have been as far as that that Eclipse. You mentioned Spun to Run. Had he won the Cigar Mile, Spun to Run would have been in the conversation as well. But it'll be interesting to see who the finalists are, and that's another thing I wanted to touch on. You and Jason Blewett a little later today, right? You announced the finalists?
Yes, at 11:05 on Gulfstream Park simulcast, gulfstreampark.com, and on XBTV, Jason and I will be announcing the top three finalists in all 17 categories. Of course, the winners in each of the categories, which were decided with the voters, will be announced at the Eclipse Awards on January 23rd, but we'll announce the finalists this morning. So everybody can tune in if they like and see who made the cut.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I said earlier, on the handicapping show, when I put my ballot together, there were a lot of just easy votes this year as compared to some years. But there are two or three categories I'm going to be very turf female was interesting. Two-year-old was interesting. So I'll be interested to see who the finalists are. All right, let's jump into some of the stakes action this afternoon. Things kick off in race number six today in the Limehouse. While we're talking, I'm going to pull up the Buffalo Man because a lot of people off of this win are going to take a look at Chivalry. Chivalry's going to be the number three horse here, getting it done on November 30th, a buyer number that was a lifetime best and a pretty solid buyer as compared to this field. But Zeno Boys looks interesting. Cajun Casanova, or Casanova on the race two back to Hollywood Beach, a little bit interesting, albeit that was on the turf. But as I say, Chivalry at the race we're looking at right now, I think will take a lot of action. What do you see in the Limehouse?
Yeah, the race definitely revolves around Chivalry. I did speak to his trainer, Ralph Nick, yesterday, and he's not thrilled with the rail post position, as is understandable. But that race in the Buffalo Man, I mean, he was just as game as possible. Went west, had actually passed him on the outside, and he came back inside, which was really tenacious. So they freshened him up since the end of November, and he's been really thrilled with how he's moving. He's definitely much stronger in the afternoons than he is in the mornings as far as being a workhorse. And he did say, you know, eventually they're going to try to stretch him out and see what happens. Ralph has had the family, the brother Garter and Ty was probably one of the most successful horses in the family, and he won going a mile. So he says, obviously, that's something you think about down the road, but he's really thrilled with just how he's been progressing in his last couple. And he really seems to be much stronger when he's on or close to the lead. So I will imagine that he'll have to send from the inside. But it's been a really strong meet so far for Ralph Nix and Emisail Jaramillo teaming up as well.
Yeah, Jaramillo's been having a very good – the jockey colony down there this winter. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out through the entire meet. Kitten's Joy is racing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kitten's Joy, race number seven and a half on the grass. I'm going to pull up the Pulpit, going back to November 30th again. I'll tell people to pay attention to the winner, not in this race, but comes up in the dirt race a little bit later on. So Sola Valente, take a look at that one. But in this race will be the second place finisher, Irish Mias for Graham Motion. A couple of starts early in the career that we saw up here in Saratoga on the dirt, since switching to the turf, has shown some nice ability, including this second place finish with a buyer number that is pretty solid in this field. Summer to Remember from Pletcher on the outside is very interesting to me as well. What are your thoughts on the Kitten's Joy?
Well, I agree. I think Summer to Remember is really interesting. I thought that his first race was strong at Saratoga. He was certainly flattered by who he ran against. And then coming back last time out, off of a bit of a layoff, it almost looked to me like he was certainly right for that field and he ran well, but it even looked like that was just kind of a screw-tightening race. And I think looking back from my notes, from a physical standpoint, he was going to be much stronger next time out. So I'm excited to see what he looks like today and how he runs. And I did speak to Todd yesterday as well, and he told me that they had planned on putting him in an allowance first, but didn't look like the race would fill, and this looks like a good spot for him. And he couldn't be happier with how he's progressing, and thought that this was the logical next step for him based off of how he ran, and think that he's a horse with a lot of talent. He also told me that his other runner, the number six, Mystic Lancelot, they're taking the blinkers off. It seems like things kind of went a little bit haywire. His debut at Saratoga was so impressive. He clearly had a little bit of antics. He seems to kind of have maybe a little gait trouble, lugging out a little bit late in the race. So that was the thought process behind the blinkers. But he didn't really seem to be running as sharp. Obviously, he was facing good company in his last couple, but hoping that the blinkers off will help him to kind of settle a little bit. And he actually seemed a little bit more keen on this one, who's faced graded stakes company before.
Yeah, that's interesting because I looked at him too, and Pletcher's having such a good meet. You always have to take a look at the longer half of the quote-unquote uncoupled entry. Mm-hmm. And that, as you say, that debut was so good. And that they came right out of the debut and tried the grade one summer up at Woodbine. You would have to think they were also thinking this, that's a win and you're in. Maybe you have a Breeders' mm-hmm. Cup horse. So that they were so high on yeah. the horse early, and there's that equipment change. I looked at that one, didn't quite pull the trigger, but it's interesting that you know Todd was maybe leaning towards that one as being a little bit preferred.
Yeah, it was interesting to get some insight. I feel like Todd is usually a great person for that. He'll be, you know, pretty upfront with and straightforward with his responses, and like I said, the thought process, especially behind things like equipment change. So I thought it was pretty insightful, and I agree with you. I think Irish Mias is probably going to have a good account of himself. I thought his last couple of races have been strong, and Grand Motion's had some really well-meant runners down here with a stakes win last weekend with Tariga at a big price. So his horses down here in South Florida have been really well-meant as well.
Yeah, I was doing the handicapping show, and actually I thought Tariga was very playable, so the price was a nice surprise there.
For sure.
Gulfstream's eighth race this afternoon, the Glitter Woman, three-year-old fillies going 6.5 for $75,000. I pulled up House Party from November 30th. Number one will be Spanish Point. And that's kind of the way I'm tilting in this afternoon's Glitter Woman. 2 for 2 so far for George Abreu. And just off of that 2 for 2, you know, the I'm a buyer's guy. The buyers don't jump off the page. I think they compare nicely with most in this field. There are a couple with buyers on the page that are maybe a little bit better. But Sayonara Baby, who has a pretty good buyer, comparatively speaking, last time, that was in a maiden claimer, so I'm not sure there. Sound Machine has a buyer underneath, but it was three starts back. So I thought off of the first two starts, the two undefeated starts, the one we just looked at in a stakes race, Spanish Point, to me, is most interesting. Your thoughts on the Glitter Woman?
Well, I agree. I think Spanish Point's going to be very interesting. I thought Sound Machine's debut was phenomenal, obviously. The House Party, she really seemed to take a big step forward. And I thought it was a good performance. I didn't love how she was really late switching leads in the stretch and just couldn't get by Spanish Point. I would have liked to see a little bit more punch from her, but it's certainly been a really strong meet, a strong year for Safi Joseph Jr. And I actually thought the other Abreu horse was interesting, too, in the two, Lady Anna. I mean, talk about people having a good meet. Edgar Prado just really had quite a resurgence and just seems like almost every day has a win on the card, or so it feels like sometimes. And obviously, somebody with more than 7,000 victories to his name, but he's been selective about who he's been riding and has had some really well-meant runners. And this one's just stepping up to face competition for the first time, but Lady Anna and Spanish Point have actually been working together in company in the morning, and it looks like Lady Anna has been a little bit stronger. So I'm curious to see how this filly does stepping up to base state competition.
Yeah, and I love Into Mischief runners, and living mm-hmm. up to that breeding, she won the first career start, Lady Anna, and so it'll be interesting to see. I think number-wise has to step up, but in the second start, that is clearly not out of the question. In fact, that's something horses often do, and notably will jump forward number-wise, so she's interesting as well. The Ginger Brew, I'm interested to get your thoughts here, because to me, this is a fun race, field of 12 scheduled. there's a lot of speed in here, and we talked about it earlier on the handicapping show, and because of that, I'm tilting towards moral reasoning from Chad and Klarovich. We're going to take a look at the maiden breaker from that one. Moral reasoning will be the number one horse. Came from a little bit off the pace in this race, and Cheermeister has some speed in here this afternoon. Here My Prayer has some speed, and Abscon coming out of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly Turf is clearly going to take a lot of action due to the numbers, and that one has shown some speed as well. So I was looking at maybe a little pace duel that'll set things up for moral reasoning to do what we're seeing in this race right here. But as I say, I think you can go in a lot of different ways, make a lot of different arguments for and against in the Ginger Brew. How did you see it?
Well, I agree with you that it does look like moral reasoning is going to make an even better account of herself today. She faced a really strong field in her Belmont debut. Alms won two graded stakes after that victory that day. And she wasn't the sharpest out of the gate last time out. So I'm thinking, and she was a little bit green as well. Now with a couple of races under her belt, she's going to have some more distance to work with today. That should help her. And I hope that she gets out of the gate sharper than she has. Now, it's not been every single race, but in general, since January 1st, when we came back here at Gulfstream, speed has been very kind and very favorable on the turf. Seemed like the first couple of days, it was pretty much all wire-to-wire winners. So when I was handicapping a couple of days out for this, I was really keeping that in mind, just in general. We have seen some horses come from a little bit off the pace, but in general, speed is really what you want on the turf. It seems to carry really well. So I did include, and I think you have to use Abscon besides the class, especially for that reason, because she does have a lot of natural speed. And when I spoke to Irad Ortiz about it yesterday, he said that that was his game plan, and he thought that that was one of her best weapons. And he said that he didn't really feel like the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies was as emblematic of her ability. And if you watch the Natalma back again, she had horses on either side of her and was incredibly game, really fought very hard. So I'm excited to see her coming out of the Breeders' Cup as well. And maybe moral reasoning steps up and makes a good account of herself. But I think it's a very wide-open race and a good betting race, too. A lot of different ways to go. But I think those horses in the middle are definitely ones you have to use.
Yeah, I agree. This is one of the ones I'm looking forward to on Saturday afternoon, including finally stakes action in the 10th. That is the Mucho Macho Man. I mentioned it earlier. I think the three-year-old trail this year got off to a great start up in New York with Mike Trombetta's Independence Hall, living up to the buzz that he came out of the Nashua with. But again, we talked on the handicapping show a little bit earlier about this race, the Mucho Macho Man. And I think top to bottom, I don't know if any horse comes into the race with the kind of buzz Independence Hall had earlier this week. But I think top to bottom, this is a stronger race. And I can certainly see one or two coming out of that this race with some three-year-old buzz. We're going to take a look at the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Sprint. The Gulf Park West Juvenile Sprint. And it's going to be As Seen on TV, the number five horse getting it done. Third career start, second win, placed in a stakes race just before this, so some nice stakes experience. So As Seen on TV, interesting. Solo Valente, who we saw a little bit earlier winning the Pulpit, that horse is interesting as well, but the first two starts obviously on the turf. Chance It for, as the aforementioned Safi Joseph, who, you, as you have said, has been having a good couple of years down in South Florida, but he comes out of a nice stakes race, restricted stakes race last time for a $400,000 purse. Again, I think this is an interesting three-year-old race early in the season that can produce at least one or two who folks will be able to focus on.
I agree. I think as far as the buzz goes, I do think there has been buzz about Chance It here in Florida because he won two out of his three legs of the Florida Sire Stakes with those increasing distances. We haven't seen him since September 28th, and I'm very hesitant about him today as he is stepping up into open competition and horses that have face graded stakes company or open stakes company in the past. So I'm really curious to see what we're going to get, but he had an incredible work just the other day here at Gulfstream, going 46 flat, and he did it pretty easily as well, breaking off of a workmate and making up some ground. So I'm excited to see him. I think he's very talented. I think As Seen on TV, I think actually Kelly Breen has a shot to win the late double. I like Epic Romance and a big price in the last race, but this horse was really, really good in that win at Gulfstream Park West, and his two races so far have been impressive. But I'm most intrigued, actually, by the number one, South Bend. Has to deal with the inside post, but he had a wet track going two turns in the Kentucky Jockey Club, a grade two company, last time out at Churchill. And all of his races, I watched him back several times. All of them, I thought, were really game prior to that. He's been working in company with He Hate Me, who's a little bit older, a little bit more experienced for Stanley Huff. And Stanley's had been a little bit quiet so far down here in Florida. Hasn't had many runners, but I think obviously really seasoned, really accomplished, and a great trainer. So I'm really curious to see this one. Julian LeBrew knows this horse quite well, too. So that's kind of where I landed getting back on a fast-paced track.
Yeah, interesting coming out of the two stakes at Churchill. That Street Sense two back was a race that has been very productive and kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think the Kentucky Jockey Club, I'm still on board Tis the Law coming out of that race because I think he can.
Yeah, I really like that horse a lot. Yeah. He's one of my favorite three-year-olds, I believe.
Yeah, I think he got a good education in that race as well. So, again, fun way to kick off the three-year-old season down in South Florida with a lot of great stakes acting this afternoon. Keisha, as always, appreciate the visit. You're taking the time, and we'll let you get away and get over to the podium to get ready because we will be tuned in a little bit later on for the Eclipse finalists as well.
Great. Thanks so much, Seth. Good luck today.
Appreciate it. Keisha Courtney from Gulfstream Park. Great stakes card today, again, in the midst of the championship meet. We'll take a break. When we come back, Jeremy Plonk. We'll talk more three-year-olds. Countdown to the crown right after this. Stay tuned.
Wagering on horse racing just got a lot easier at Capital OTB with our newly designed state-of-the-art mobile wagering site. Everything you need is right here on one easy-to-navigate mobile platform. Set your favorite tracks, pick your horses, place your bets, all with a simple tap of the screen. Plus, you'll have access to Capital OTB TV for all our network programming. So log on to CapitalOTBBet.com and see just how easy wagering on horse racing can be. Incredible destination to live, work, and play with easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport. It's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement, from world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
Here's some exciting news from Capital OTB. Capital Off-Track Betting and the Rivers Casino have partnered to bring you the finest experience in wagering on all your favorite thoroughbred and harness tracks from right inside the casino. Our newest location is open daily and can be found at Vance Flicks Bar, offering live tellers, self-serve betting terminals, racing information kiosks, and all the amenities you come to expect from Capital OTB. See you at the Rivers Casino in Schenectady.
Happy to be joined now by our friend Jeremy Plonk, horseplayernow.com, and Countdown to the Crown. And yesterday was the first edition of the 2020 Countdown to the Crown. It's available. If you want to pick it up, go to horseplayernow.com, or I have it linked over on Equidaily as well. Jeremy, good morning.
Hey, good morning. It's good to be with you. Back in the flow for, the next 23 weeks or so, all the way through the Belmont Stakes with Countdown to the Crown. 15th year, it's hard to believe. We began the series in 2006, and it's come a long way. I estimate 1.5 million words written over the 15 years.
very good. Before we get into this year, let's go back to last year a little bit. Put in my Eclipse votes maybe 3 or 4 days ago, just came in under the deadline. Any doubt, Maximum Security, three-year-old of the year. And that said, we talked about on the handicapping show earlier, given what we saw last week from Omaha Beach, we can only lament that he missed the Triple Crown and the important summertime races, because then it would have been, I think, an interesting, perhaps, eclipse battle. But what are your thoughts on last year's three-year-old season now that it's in the rearview mirror?
Yeah, you also had Code of Honor in there, you know. I mean, he had a really good year, and he's, you know, those are the three that'll be announced, I'm sure, as the finalists later today. As Acacia mentioned, that's coming up here at the top of the next hour. Maximum Security, to me, had the best season. His Kentucky Derby performance was fantastic, whether you sit on one side of the DQ or the other, and his Express Bet Florida Derby was a fantastic effort. And then in later in the season, he did what these three-year-olds are supposed to do. He went and beat older horses twice, including the Cigar Mile, and also knocked off a Breeders' Cup champion along the way, too, when being spun to run. So I think it's Maximum Security. He's the champion three-year-old. I think he had the best season from start to finish. I mean, you go all the way through. But, boy, you know, Seth, when you were sitting January 4th of 2019, you weren't thinking Maximum Security. You know, I mean, this was a maiden claimer starter allowance kind of horse. And the trail has changed drastically. And that's really, you know, that's forced my hand to change a little bit. The last 5 years, we did a preseason annual magazine and put together that was really strongly focused on developing the big list of horses, and the way it has unraveled the last couple of years with always dreaming, you know, just one dull effort at Saratoga and then off, with Justify not even starting at this point, with Maximum Security just a maiden claiming winner at this point. I just decided to pull the plug on the preseason annual and all the effort that goes into digging on the horses, and we took the pages of the preseason annual that were still the most valuable, all the prep histories, the stats and trends for each stakes race, and we brought them online. So when you go to countdowntothecrown.com, the whole stakes schedule is there, and you can click on it, and the same information that would have been in the magazine format is now on web pages that you're able to go through throughout the course of the year. So as we get to the sham, you can click on the sham stakes and figure out who's won it, what path it's taken to win this race over the years, the impact it's had on the Triple Crown trail and such. We added a couple feature stories, but I just felt that the part of that preseason annual, the big list, as I called it over the past couple of years, has just been a futile exercise recently, and the way horses are being trained nowadays has made me rethink a little bit that I think we need to focus kind of from this point forward, and that's the way we're going to do it this year.
Yeah, I think since I've gotten in the game, the Derby changed itself. You used to look at those breeding numbers and they held up, and then it started to get, there was maybe a little more speed on the breeding side over the past, 10 or 15 years that didn't figure 20 or 25 years ago. So that changed slowly. But as you say, over the past couple of years, the historical stuff that you may rely on in the two-year-old season wasn't quite important, as important. And while you're talking, I pulled up that maiden win for Maximum Security, and for folks who have forgotten that, it was a notable story. We will not see the likes of a maiden claimer like this one again. Maximum Security wins and goes on to win the Kentucky Derby. Math Wizard finishes third, and this was not a high-priced claimer. Math Wizard finishes third.
No, 16,000 maiden claimer. I mean,
and wins the Pennsylvania Derby.
You got to rethink things, are you kind of being a revisionist, historian by doing so? Look, I mean, if you follow the NFL, it used to be a great defense and a strong running game is what you wanted, and that's not the case anymore, And so things change, and people see something work, and it starts to change. Remember, before Barbaro, and this goes back to the beginning of Countdown to the Crown, 2006 season, Barbaro laid off from the Florida Derby to the Kentucky Derby. It was a five-week break. And we were all talking about a horse named Needles from the 1950s, who was the last horse who had a five-week break before the Kentucky Derby. Now, everybody wants a five-, six-, seven-week break, And so it took Barbaro winning and showing everybody that it could be done. And then all of a sudden, everybody said, okay, I can lay off 5 weeks. Races like the Louisiana Derby moved on the calendar so they could be a last stop for the Kentucky Derby instead of being, Louisiana Derby used to set you up for the Wood Memorial or the Bluegrass or a race like that. Now it's a last stop destination. So the trail has really changed, and over the 14 complete seasons, now in the 15th of Countdown to the Crown, we're trying to adapt to all those things and the evolution and the changes of it. And, you know, the last three Kentucky Derby winners, you know, because Country House last year, we're talking Maximum Security, but Country House was the official winner. He was a maiden as well. So the last three Kentucky Derby winners were maidens turning into the three-year-old year. I mean, it's just different, you know. And so, like everybody else, we're trying to stay on top of it and figure out what the next evolution is. And, you know, I think better late than never is probably the approach. I think you're better off focusing on what's happening lately than the older stuff.
And a great place to do that is Countdown to the Crown comes out on Fridays, and you still have the traditional pages you've put together in the past. I always like the three things you won't read anywhere else, and you go over stakes races, previews and reviews, but also this time of year, maiden races and allowance races that'll point out horses that are going to be interesting to watch. And you've kind of alluded to it already, but the landing page now, and as I say, if folks go to horseplayernow.com, you can get to it. I have it linked on Equidelli, and the landing page is a little bit different, and it looks like you've juggled things up, added a podcast this year and whatnot. Just talk about the overall update to Countdown to the Crown.
Yeah, you know, it used to come out just on Friday, and it'd be one big PDF file, you know, one file that had everything in it, and the reviews were several days old because of, you know, just coming out once a week. So what we wanted to do this year was get the reviews out faster. So we changed the format, and you can go onto the website and the landing page there and click on the allowance reviews or the maiden special weight reviews, and you'll see them up there all within a day or two of when those races run. And by Tuesday of every week, 2 days after the weekend, everything will be updated as far as the reviews go. And not only updated, but it's in a Google document now where you can sort it, and we've got it by category. And so as the season progresses, you want to see what I've written about a particular horse, you can go in there and search that horse's name then and go through and get all the different pieces. We're grading races for the first time this year, and this is why I talk about how we want to do things a little bit different, about what have you done lately being more important. So in the past, we would write a review of all the races, but we didn't kind of tie them all together with a grading system. But we're going through the old school, you know, A-plus through F this year, and we're grading all the maiden races, all the allowance races, and all the stakes races based on themselves. So how does this race rank as a maiden special weight nationally? How does it rank as an allowance race nationally? And how does it rank as a stakes race? So an A-plus maiden winner may match up in the next race against a C-plus maiden winner, and we think that might be a way to help, you know, see the strength of schedule. That's what we're trying to evaluate with these horses. And a lot of them avoid each other nowadays, too. That's just the fact of the trail. There are more preps. You've got these points preps. Some are worth more than others. There are places to go around the country. California horses head to Arkansas to try to duck some of the rivals or split stables up. So strength of schedule is kind of difficult to evaluate. And we hope that the grading system this year will help put a little bit of sanity towards that process.
That leads into very nicely. I'm going to be interested in your thoughts, and we'll go back to Wednesday that essentially kicked off the Derby Trail, the three-year-old season in New York, the Jerome. We were all looking forward to it ever since Mike Trombetta and company announced that they would aim for this race after the nice win in the Nashua. And we're going to look at the stretch run here to the Jerome. It will be Independence Hall, the number three horse. I'll tell you, I said this earlier, top of the stretch, I thought, man, he should really be pulling away from these horses. And just about the time I said that, he did start to pull away. Four-length victory as far as the chart margin is called. Now, I pulled up the buyer a couple of days ago. It was an 83 buyer off of the nice 101 in the Nashua. But it's January 1st. He's kind of chugging along at 24 seconds and change all the way around. And how much, you know, juice do you want to squeeze out of the lemon here on January 1st with the, you know, the Derby still 5 months away? So he wins by four lengths the way he should over this field. It was not a strong field, but I thought it was a good start to the season. I'm interested in your thoughts on the Jerome and the victory by Independence Hall.
I thought it was a good race for Independence Hall. I thought it was a bad race overall. I mean, there wasn't much behind him in that respect. But in terms of, like, the calendar and getting your season started, and remember, this was a non-Breeders' Cup horse, you know, so off since the Nashua, a couple of months. This was a good starting off point, you know, and I think it's a good launching pad. Will any of the horses behind him be of any importance? I don't think so at all. I think this was a clearly one-horse race. It was bet that way. It was run that way, and he did everything he should have. A 75-1 shot kind of set the pace for everybody, and you know, and so it all went to plan, you know, and I think that was good. You know, you don't want to overexert in a race like this. You don't want to lay too much out there. The goal is the first Saturday in May, not the first day of the calendar year. So I thought it was a good effort. I called it a C-plus race in terms of stakes races. You know, I mean, we're going to see some really good efforts down the line. Certainly, average to above average because of the winner. The depth behind it, you know, was something that would keep it down for sure. But a good starting off point. Now he'll head to Florida next. And, you know, thought process would be the Sam F. Davis is one race they have talked about. And, of course, races like the Fountain of Youth at Gulfstream Park would make a lot of sense, too. But, you know, the Davis comes up in February, so it depends on how much they want to run or maybe how the horse comes out of the race. That one comes up a little quicker on the calendar. So, you know, I kind of think that would be a good spot for him. And I'd like to see Independence Hall next in Sam F. Davis. I think that would be a good spot for him.
Yeah, going to be based down there at Tampa, which gives him plenty of options to really go wherever. And this time of year, you know, East Coast, essentially. You're looking Gulfstream, Fairgrounds, Oaklawn, potentially come back up to New York if they wanted to. There are all those options. And as you were talking about how things have changed as far as the 5 weeks out, speaking of New York, people look at the Wood now, and maybe it's not as productive as it was years ago. And part of that is due to the calendar now. Everybody wants that 5 weeks out. When I was a kid and first got into the game, it'd be 2 weeks out. Well, 2 weeks out from the Derby, you're in the middle of April. The weather's great. You get 4 or 5 weeks out, you come up to New York and you're training. The weather maybe isn't so good. So I think the other options with that five-week window that folks are looking for make some of the southern venues a little more attractive, perhaps. And I think that has played into what the Wood has become over the years.
For sure. And the two races that used to produce horses for the Wood were the Florida Derby and Louisiana Derby.
Yeah.
Those, you know, you think Funnyside coming up north and meeting Empire Maker. That was Florida Derby versus Louisiana Derby alumni. And that was really the last time that the Wood had a really strong finish in the Kentucky Derby when those two ran 1-2. So those races used to be early March, you know, and then you got another race early April and you ran in early May for the Derby. Now those races are late March, which makes them, you know, no go. You can't go from one of those to the Wood Memorial now very easily. So it's, you know, you'd almost be cramming races to try to pull something like that off. So the calendar has definitely impacted the Wood Memorial. And it's, you know, you look at the last destination, but the 3 weeks out of the Arkansas Derby should have put a dagger in that race, yet the Arkansas Derby keeps marching on. And last year, Country House came out of the Arkansas Derby. So that race has managed to keep producing. But they don't get their horses traditionally and haven't traditionally. You know, Arkansas Derby horses haven't necessarily been Florida Derby horses, Louisiana Derby for sure. But having that little extra space from the Louisiana Derby to the Arkansas Derby now, you know, it gives them a little bit of edge over the Wood because they have that extra week. And there are some horses in Arkansas who are just trying to get that last ditch point, too, because it's kind of last call for a big 100-point race. But, you know, the Wood, I think the biggest impact of the Wood is the fact that the Louisiana and Florida Derbies have moved on the calendar too close to the Wood.
Yeah, and you alluded to it. As handicappers, we've had to adjust over the years, and that the Derby Trail, a perfect example of what you have to do and think about as the years progress and things change on the training and owning side of the game and how connections point for races. Independence Hall, I pulled up Countdown to the Crown, your top 20. Independence Hall sitting at number 3 on your list. And just looking down the list, some of the horses that intrigue me. I mentioned earlier, Tis the Law. I still like him coming out of the Kentucky Jockey Club. I think he got a good education out of there. He sits at number 10 on your list. Shoplifted, who I liked in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, but just didn't seem to take to Santa Anita. Came back to wind up his year, winning the Springboard Mile. Shoplifted, number 13 on your list. But number 1 is Honor AP. We're going to take a look at his maiden breaker and give you a chance to talk about why you put him at the top of the list. Honor AP started the career August 17th at Del Mar and ran second in the career debut at 8-1. Followed it up as the 1-2 favorite in this race we're going to look at Santa Anita, October 13th. The number 3 horse under Mike Smith wins by a chart margin of 5.25 lengths for trainer John Sheriffs. This is Honor AP at the top of your current top 20. Talk a little bit about this one.
Well, he's got a great pedigree and, you know, a trainer who's been there and done that. Of course, Giacomo, trained by John Sheriffs and has had some success on the trail. what we talked about just a few minutes ago, about how the last three Derby winners were maidens turning into this time of year, kind of, you know, leaning towards maybe a little more lightly raced horse who may have some further upside down the line versus, you know, a more proven two-year-old who's been through the stakes ranks. I like the Californians. I like the West over the East in the three-year-old ranks just in general. It's been stronger over the last decade or so. So, you know, you're looking at a West Coast horse who has upside, who wasn't overextended as a two-year-old and showed flashy brilliance. I mean, I think he's got the tools. Now, the problem is he was supposed to run in the Sham this week, and John Sheriff detected he was off a little bit in the front left foot. So they bypassed this race. Now you got the Lewis Memorial coming up in February. If he can't make the Lewis Memorial in February, we got big, big problems. So, you know, for Honor AP, this is the kind of year it is, Seth. I mean, you start off with your number one, and you're willing to take a little bit of a shot on a horse who wasn't quite right this week physically. So, but then you look, you know, Dennis's Moment coming off the horrible performance in the Breeders' Cup. Eight Rings disappointing in the Breeders' Cup. Tis the Law getting beat. You know, Tis the Law probably be number one if he ran a big race in the Kentucky Jockey Club. He did have some excuses. Maxfield was the best two-year-old I saw last year, hands down, but he got injured before the Breeders' Cup, had surgery to remove a knee chip. He's supposed to be back in late January, early February at the Brendan Walsh's barn in Florida. So, you know, Maxfield is another one, but there's just question marks everywhere you go. I mean, then there's some horses like Green Light Go and Free Technique, who your Naira fans are going to be familiar with, who I thought were really good last year and weren't overextended as two-year-olds running, you know, too many races in big spots. Free Technique's going to head to Oaklawn, and that's been such a productive prep path over the years. I think Jeremiah Englehart and Bill Parcells may have themselves one there, and I think Free Technique's a horse to watch this year in Hot Springs.
Yeah, you've got Storm the Court sitting at number 8, Structor sitting at 17. I talked earlier on the handicapping show about my Eclipse ballot. I put Structor on top. I couldn't pull the trigger on Storm the Court. And that's one of the categories that I think is going to be interesting. On an Eclipse ballot, that for the most part for me, was pretty easy. There were a couple of categories, and the two-year-old was one of them.
Yeah, and look, I mean, for what you're talking about is, you know, who had the best two-year-old season champion, two-year-old Structor being a Breeders' Cup champ and running the table. I had no problem with that at all. I thought Lady Eli, when she was a two-year-old, should have been the two-year-old filly champion. But they didn't go that route. And I'll be interested to see if they will make a two-year-old grass horse the champion. So Structor's got a shot there, I think. In terms of my list, you know, I'm not positive that they're going to go to the dirt with this horse. I'm not positive he'll take to the dirt. So while I'm respecting him and put him in the top 20 to start, let's see how it goes, see how he trains, and what kind of races they're pointing him towards later in the year. And Chad isn't one of these guys yet in his career who is all in for the Triple Crown. You know, he just doesn't, it's not his obsession. Maybe if he goes a little bit longer into his career and hasn't won a Derby yet, and everybody's saying you haven't won a Derby, maybe it becomes a bigger priority. But he's not the kind of guy who you look at Structure right now and say, well, he's definitely going to give him a shot to be a Derby horse. He might give him a shot. Other trainers you would look at and say, you know, a Mark Cassie, a Wayne Lucas, Bob Baffert, you know, these guys who try to get Derby horses every year would certainly give that horse every chance to become a Derby horse. With Chad, you're not quite sure. It's kind of 50-50.
Yeah, as you said that, I was thinking, you know what, you nailed it as you're talking about that, because I think if this was a horse in just a majority of barns, let's put it that way, you'd think, oh, they'll give, it's a really good two-year-old, just turned three-year-old. They'll give this horse a shot on the dirt. But I don't know whether Chad Brown, I'm not convinced they will. I think he's happy to have a very good turf runner. And Structor obviously is that. So we'll see what they do with that one going forward. All right, let's talk a little three-year-old action for today, because we have the Mucho Macho Man at Gulfstream. We have the Sham, as you mentioned, out at Santa Anita. So let's get some of your thoughts as far as those two stakes races. Mucho Macho Man, race 10 today at Gulfstream Park. We talked a little bit earlier and watched As Seen on TV with Acacia Courtney winning the Gulfstream Park West Juvenile Sprint to go 2-for-3 in the career so far. Did that with a very nice buyer number. Solo Volante is going to be interesting. albeit switching from the turf. That's going to be the big question mark. But chance it coming out of the In Reality last time, and we're going to take a look at that performance. The Florida Sire Series, the In Reality, $400,000 up for grabs. Chance it's the number three horse here. Chart margin, seven lengths plus, a nice buyer, really a string of nice buyer figures underneath. So this one is going to take some action, certainly. As I said earlier to Acacia, Independence Hall had the buzz going into the Jerome, but as you mentioned, overall kind of a weak field. I think top to bottom, this is a stronger field that I think has the chance to have one or two or maybe three come out with a little bit of buzz as they head along the Derby Trail. Your thoughts on the Mucho Macho Man today?
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't have the headliner like Independence Hall, but it has two, three potential horses who you can see to the Holy Bull, to the Fountain of Youth, and continue down the path, whereas the Jerome looked kind of like a one-and-done scenario. Chances, as you see in this race, finished up really well. If you like numbers, and I do when it comes to the late pace figure from Brist, this horse has put together 104 and 100 in the last two races at 7 furlongs in and a mile and a 16th. And Chanted is a forwardly placed horse. You typically don't see speed horses. He's not speed crazy, but he's definitely tactical speed. Usually you don't see horses that run towards the front throw up 100-plus figures going 7 furlongs and a mile and a 16th on the back end of their races. So Chanted was very strong in those two. But they were in August and September. There's been a lot of time since then. How well will Safi Joseph Jr. have Chanted for the comeback? If you look at the workout tabs, it's just bullet, bullet, bullet all over the place. So you would think that they're treating this pretty serious. And, you know, when you talk about trainer intent and you look at these trail races, is this a comeback spot or is this a meaningful spot? And when you have a barn like Safi Joseph, I don't think he's taking 100 granders for granted, you know. Last year, Shug McGahey brought Code of Honor here, and I think it was just like, okay, well, it fits the condition where we're at. This could be an allowance race. It wouldn't matter to me. And he ran like it. He ran like a horse who kind of wasn't really meant to be there. And he was actually a much better horse than that. But when you get a horse like Chance It for a barn that, Safi doesn't have $100,000 stakes horses up and down the shed row. He's a high percentage trainer, but doesn't have elite horses. So I don't think, and you got a horse here who's by currency swap, who's a really good sprinter. Chance It has shown he can go to the mile and the 16th against Florida bred, against open company runners going two turns down the line. I think that's still a question. So when you go one turn for $100,000 with a horse like this, you can see why you put three bullets into them. They want to win, you know, and I think this is a winning race for them today.
Yeah, you know, as you said, and Acacia mentioned it earlier, hasn't been seen since late September. But, boy, you look at those workouts, and a 46 flat last Sunday just kind of jumps off the page.
Yeah, this horse has always been a pretty fast workhorse, but now seems to be, like, really knuckled down. And again, this, you know, and we've seen this early season at Gulfstream over the years, you know. I mean, there have been some horses and some pretty notorious ones early in the meet run, really fast races, going a shorter race, you know, these one-turn miles or maybe up to a mile and a 16th. And it doesn't serve them well to be a mile and an eighth horse for the Florida Derby or a mile and a quarter horse for the Kentucky Derby. But remember, every horse has a Derby, you know, and they're not all in Kentucky. And Chance It doesn't strike me as a horse for a mile and a quarter in May. I mean, he did a lot as a two-year-old, 5 starts, 3 stakes races. So he's already got a lot on, you know, he's already got a lot of tread on the tires for a horse in this era of racing that we're talking about. And, you know, his pedigree doesn't scream for the mile and a quarter. So his Derbies are now. I mean, he's got to win this and the Holy Bull, I think. I mean, those are his races. And then maybe you would think about turning him back or keeping him shorter in distance. Maybe then after that, your Derby becomes something like the Jerkins at Saratoga in the summer, you know, which all the great three-year-old sprinters want to end up with. But I think Chance is in a good spot today. I think it's an either-or scenario. He's the horse on the front or near the front. And then if it does get too hot and it baits and he's too, you know, keyed up from those super fast workouts and the layoff, if he's too keyed up, then South Bend comes and gets him. I that's the scenario I see in this race. South Bend is taking on the best competition for sure after the Street Sense and the Kentucky Jockey Club. And he's a horse, you know, I saw him at Keeneland win, and I thought he was going to really win easily that day at Keeneland and just kind of got there. But they didn't go super fast that day, and so he overcame a slow pace and was still able to get there. That's not going to be the case today. There's going to be plenty of pace for South Bend to close into. So Chances, I think, has a comfortable lead at the eighth pole. And and then South Bend either makes them sweat a little bit late or isn't good enough.
All right, let's move on to the Sham out in Southern California this afternoon. A field of six scheduled in here. And obviously, Authentic is going to take a lot of action. We're going to watch the maiden special, Maiden Breaker, from November 9th at Del Mar. Authentic's going to be the number six horse. This was the career debut. Why will the horse take action? Well, because of this debut, a solid buyer attached to it, an 87 for a two-year-old in November. Pretty good number. By Into Mischief, lived up to that breeding. But more importantly, Bob Baffert, and on the owner's side, you see Starlight and Mattaquette and company. So some potent connections attached to this horse. And on the number, it seems like if he comes back to that, he can maybe regress a few points and still have a little edge on this field. Zimba Warrior for Keith DeSormo comes out of a couple of stakes races, so has some experience. Uncaptured Hero tossed in a pretty good number to break the maiden last time, although it was a maiden claimer. And Bob Baffert has Azul Coast in here as well off a debut maiden breaker. But again, the number is a little bit lighter than the topic. Taishan has a number that kind of stacks up with the top pick for Richard Baltus. So it's an interesting field, but I think Authentic, off of that career debut victory that we just looked at, with the connections attached, probably the one to beat.
Yeah, you know, the two Baffert's probably slug it out here, and why not? You know, he's won this race three of the last six. Last year he got beat with Coliseum at a very short price, but he's got two efforts in here with Authentic and Azul Coast, and one has won brilliantly going short. The other one is one workmanlike going long, you know. So you kind of have, if this race sets up as a race where the fastest, most brilliant horse wins at the two-turn mile, then Authentic. If it's one of those races where they kind of slug it out and a bunch of horses don't want to get the trip, then Azul Coast will probably get up to win it. Azul Coast ended up being my pick in here because I think he's going to be the bigger price of the two. I don't think the spread between the two horses is that dramatic, and I think the price will be much better. You get Joel Rosario, whose time to finish is good or better than anybody in the game today, and maybe as good as anybody since the great Eddie Delahousse. So I think it's the right running style. If you go back and watch the replay, the debut at Los Alamitos, the reason Azul Coast was so wide in that race and so far back is the horse blew the clubhouse turn on the inside and carried him out to the popcorn stand on the first turn, and then Drayden Van Dyke just kind of kept him wide the whole way. And Azul Coast just mowed him down and won easy. Don't know what was behind him that day, as we don't know really with Authentic what those two horses beat in late season races. You know, one at Del Mar, one at Los Alamitos. You know, I prefer of the really brilliant California horses, I like to see them break their maiden during that September meet at Santa Anita. Usually you get some longer races in there, a little bit longer than the ones we see at Del Mar. So I kind of like those September, early October maiden breakers in Southern California. The later ones, you know, those were probably weaker fields than Authentic and Azul Coast beat at the two venues they ran at. But there's not much in here. It almost has to come down to one of those two. Taishan would be the one that does fall into that Santa Anita maiden breaker category. Baltus looks like he has a pretty good one in here. And if there's anything off, you know, off Baffert here, it would be Taishan, I think, would be the other one to consider. So half of the six-horse field I really don't think has much of a chance, and Bob's got the strong hand, as he usually does. If Azul Coast is 7-2, I think you might dive in and make a play there. But you need a little bit of price.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see where the betting public goes because, as I said, it seems like with the connections and that first start, folks will tilt towards Authentic. But as you kind of alluded to, that debut that we looked at from Del Mar was at 5.5. This is at a two-turn mile this afternoon in the Sham, and Azul Coast over at La Salle ran the mile already. So it will be interesting to see how the betting public parses this one out.
I will say, you know, I watched the workouts at XBTV for both of these horses, and neither of the Baffert horses really impressed me training up to the race. So, again, if you want to get creative and Taishan offers the price, he's 5-2 in John White's morning line, though. You know, if Taishan were to drift up, maybe you take a little bit of a stab in there. I didn't like the way either horse was really working, and I don't think Authentic or Azul Coast will be like Baffert horses we're talking about come April.
Yeah, interesting. We will be talking about the Derby Trail starting, as I say, last Wednesday, and part of that conversation, Countdown to the Crown, comes out every Friday in the traditional edition, but as Jeremy said, there'll be a week-long things as well. You can go by horseplayernow.com to check out all of that. Jeremy, as always, I appreciated the conversation this morning. And, of course, we will continue checking in as we make further progress along the 2020 Derby Trail.
Thank you so much, and Happy New Year to you and everyone.
Same to you and your family, Jeremy. Appreciate it. Jeremy Plank, horseplayernow.com, countdown to the crown. Again, you can just go to horseplayernow.com and pull up the information, but I have the link to this week's countdown to the crown over on Equidaily as well. We'll take a quick break, come back, and wrap it up for this Saturday morning. Stay tuned.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Here in upstate New York, no one provides bettors with more wagering options than Capital OTB. Our network of ranch and easy bet locations stretches from the mid-Hudson Valley all the way to the Canadian border and west to central New York. So whether you need to place a bet, fund your Capital Bets account, or watch the next big race, all the action is just around the corner. A full list of our branch and easy bet locations can be found online at CapitalOTB.com. Capital OTB, the better and most convenient choice for wagering in upstate New York.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. I'm Seth Merrill. Again, thanks for joining us. Thanks also to our guest this morning, Keisha Courtney, going over the nice stakes action at Gulfstream Park. And Jeremy Plant, countdown to the crown, kicking off the three-year-old season with some three-year-old conversation, as well as two nice three-year-old stakes at Gulfstream and Santa Anita this afternoon, giving a little preview there as well. Today, Woodlawn Branch, Fan Appreciation Day. That means we would like you to stop by so we can say thank you to you. Happens between noon and 5. Stop down, first 50 folks, bet voucher, giveaway item, racing program. There'll be a contest during the afternoon, food and beverage. That is the Woodlawn Branch in Schenectady. 12 noon to 5 p.m. Stop by today. Tomorrow, NFL Sunday here at the Clubhouse Racebook. It is wild card weekend, so as the playoffs kick off, you can come down and root your teams along and root your horses along as well here at the Clubhouse Racebook, as we've done every Sunday throughout the NFL season here at the Clubhouse Racebook. Football Sunday, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Sunday also is a 1% bonus on your Aqueduct wagers. There are some restrictions. Check that out via the website, capitalotb.com. And do note, Monday night, we'll have some thoroughbred action, nighttime thoroughbred action, coming up on Monday night. So keep that in mind as far as your wagering enjoyment here at Capital OTB. All right, I'm going to be back in, an hour and a half or so with OTB Live for a Saturday afternoon. Yesterday was kind of a fun last week or so. Things have been working out. I mentioned it the other day. I was out in Saratoga 4 or 5 days ago. Gentleman walked up to me and said, thank you. He had the $90 winner we had on top last Sunday at the fairgrounds. So that's what it's all about. Toss out some ideas, and if folks jump in and can make some money, that's exactly what we're aiming for. And we will do it again this afternoon with OTB Live, again, in about an hour and a half or so. In the meantime, the Gulfstream Park signal is up on my monitor up above me there, and they are going to kick off. And there you see announced the finalists for the Eclipse Awards, as Acacia mentioned earlier. So I'm going to wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America on a Saturday morning. Be back in tomorrow for more of the same. Some review of stakes action, a little handicapping, and more tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock for Racing Across America. But right now, we'll wrap it up and give you a chance to hear the 2020 Eclipse finalists. Stay tuned.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off Track Betting.